Thank you, everybody, for dialing in. We really do appreciate you taking the time on Friday and certainly in an interesting market environment that we're in. Today with us, we have Aziz Hamzaoulari, who is the Chief Investment Officer and founder of the Growth Equity Strategies team at Lumis Sales & Company. He's the portfolio manager of the Lumis Sales Large Cap, Global, and All Cap Growth Strategies, including the Lumis Sales Growth and Global Growth Mutual Funds and products outside of the U.S. Aziz is an executive vice president and a member of the firm's board of directors. He joined Lumis Sales in 2010 from Evergreen Investments, where he was senior portfolio manager and managing director. Aziz joined Evergreen in 2001, was promoted to director of research in 2003, and portfolio manager in 2006. He was head of Evergreen's Berkeley Street Growth Equity Team and was the founder of the research and investment process. Prior to Evergreen, Aziz was a senior equity analyst and portfolio manager at Manning & Napier Advisors. He has 26 years of investment industry experience. Aziz earned a BS from Bilkent University in Turkey and an MBA from George Washington University. He is also a member of the CFA Society of Boston. Just to be clear, in this role, Aziz manages an array of U.S. mutual funds, separately managed accounts, UCITS, and sub-advised products. As a reminder, not all products are available in all jurisdictions. So with that, Aziz, I want to say thank you for taking the time. We really do appreciate you taking time out of your day. To set the stage for this discussion, can you please give a brief recap of your investment philosophy and process as a growth equity portfolio manager?
Of course. So, well, first of all, I hope that everyone and their families are safe and sound and healthy. These are trying times for everybody, so I wish everyone well. In terms of, as you pointed out at the outset, our growth equity strategies platform, our philosophy for both large cap growth and global growth is the same, which is that we take a long-term private equity approach to public investing, and we always seek three distinct attributes in each business we invest in. We want these businesses to be high quality, meaning, and the way we define that is, if over time and capital coming into an industry, you know, business will be able to defend its model over the long run. Second, we want them to be sustainable growth businesses. And third, we want to buy these at a significant discount to intrinsic value so that we have downside protection. And all of these elements, of course, I always say your starting point determines your destination and how you do in up and down markets. There's no such thing as, you know, you wake up one morning and say, okay, today's the day I want to be more defensive. You wake up one day and you say, we want to be more aggressive. The key always is, you know, having this structural approach with this framework, allocating capital efficiently. And if you do that, you do well in inflection points and also in up and down markets. And then I would also like to give a very quick sense for what drives our alpha, because, you know, this is a common question that I think people should ask to each manager that they know. What's your alpha generation? What are the sources of your alpha generation and why it's sustainable? There are several key attributes. First, our time horizon. We take advantage of other investors' short-sightedness and myopic approach to investing, and we call this time arbitrage. The way to measure that is portfolio turnover. Since inception, our turnover is below 13%. In the last 10 years, it's below 10%. Second important thing is having a deep understanding of the business that you invest in. As you know, Warren Buffett said famously, the biggest risk is not knowing what you're doing. So, and that means a focused portfolio. We have 35 names in the portfolio, historically between 30 and 40 names. Third, our focus is always on quality, and we don't care what the benchmark weight of a stock is in the index. Before the 08 downturn, the large index weights were energy, industrials, materials, and if you were in those, you know, you got burned really bad. So the focus should be on quality, and the outcome of that is high active share. Our active share versus the benchmark since inception is around 80%, and same versus our competition. If you look at our active share versus other growth managers, like 80%+. Another important aspect is, you know, making sure that you invest in sustainable and profitable growth businesses. The way we measure that is cash flow growth, and our cash flow growth estimated to be around 15%. And these last two is especially important to your audience now, I am sure. I mean, we always talk about this, but, you know, it resonates even more in these trying times. Valuation is very, very important. We call this margin of safety, and that results in low down market capture. In drawdowns, how do you perform? Well, that's directly related to your ability to assess downside risk all the time, not just before a downturn, but all the time. And if you look at our since inception downside capture, we are top quartile as a manager. And last important thing is how we approach risk. We approach risk from an absolute perspective, and we diversify our portfolio through what we call business driver diversification rather than simple sector definitions. An outcome of that is a high information ratio and high sharp ratio. So that's basically genesis of what we do.
Great. Yeah, thank you for that recap. Yeah, I heard you say the other day when you presented this, a few of us, there's no right time to be a rational investor or right time to be irrational. So kind of with that in mind, what's your viewpoint of the recent market volatility?
Yeah, so I think it's very, very important to people realize that this is not the first major unexpected down market. If you look at the last 100 years, we endured many alarming, unexpected, damaging events. These include world wars, regional conflicts, the Great Depression, the tech bubble, attacks of 9/11, the financial crisis of 2007-08, the oil shock, the oil bubble, the SARS virus, the biotech bubble, the housing crisis. And what is common among all of these is that no one rings the bell for you and say, hey, this is the start of a downturn. And no one rings the bell and says, hey, this is the end of the downturn. And what people need to realize is vast majority of these downturns would have been impossible to pinpoint or call. And that's why, you know, frankly, sometimes I find these market strategies type of calls, meaning, you know, how you should be positioned, really funny, because when you need them the most, they don't know what's going to happen. And if you can go back and read all the papers from before any downturn and try to find if there was anyone calling it, very rare. And even if someone called it one of them, they couldn't call the next one. What is common in all of these is that the only way you outperform is that not that you have to call these, which they start and end, but that you act rationally all the time. There is no such thing as valuation is less important in a certain day than the others. The key is really making sure that you allocate capital rationally all the time. I mean, if you're an athlete who's going to compete in a competition, you don't go and train the day before. You train all your life. You have to eat in a certain way. You have to train in a certain way. You have to be disciplined all the time. You don't just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to run 100 meters under 10 seconds. If you want to be the first athlete in the finish line all the time, you have to be disciplined all the time. And so in investing, there are certain things you cannot predict. But what is predictable is markets are very efficient in the long term, and they always actually act rationally. What these dislocations do is they actually eliminate irrational behavior, whether it be the tech bubble of year 2000 and 2001, whether it be the energy bubble, or whether it be the recent, before this downturn, unrealistic expectations that people were embedding in some of these companies. I'll take airlines as an example. There were many investors, growth investors, piling up on airlines saying that this time is different. It's no different than what these investors were doing in 08, 09 downturn, saying that energy, industrials, and materials, we are in a super cycle. What happens is investors confuse price momentum with long-term fundamentals. Airlines is structurally a difficult business. It's capital intensive and it's cyclical. Yes, this is extreme. If it wasn't for this virus, it was going to be a recession, and recessions always happen. What's amusing to me is that before any one of these major downturns, there's always one or two people saying that this time is different. Actually, in the Davos summit, you know, one of the key leaders in a major hedge fund came out and said, the cycles are dead. There are no more cycles. And of course, it is key that we have to remember cycles always will be here. And, you know, as long as we are human beings, this will exist. So with that, the good news for us is that if you look at our performance historically, and we are, you know, institutional composite goes back to 2006. And so we went to 2007-08, we went to Q4 of 2018, we went through the 2012 correction. Now we are going through this. And in this downturn, for example, our large cap growth strategy and our fund, you know, is second percentile, outperforming as of March 18, outperforming the benchmark Russell 1000 growth by around 500 basis points, and the market measured by S&P around 600 basis points. And global growth strategy, similarly, outperforming the benchmark ACVI by a little over 500 basis points. And when you compare this to our prior performance in prior downturns, we had 11 down quarters excluding this one, and we outperformed in 9 out of 11 versus our peers, 8 out of 11 versus the benchmark. On average, we outperformed the benchmark around 250 basis points, and we outperformed our peers around 350 basis points. And not because we were able to call the start of a downturn, because we were acting rationally all the time, down and up markets.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned some of the longer term performance. How has your performance looked so far since the downturn began, we'll say on February 20th of this year?
Yeah, so if you look at versus Russell 1000 growth, we outperformed by 499 basis points. And then for global growth, similarly, we outperformed by 502 basis points. And if you look at the longer term numbers, and if you look at the fund, very similarly, if you look at Lumisail's growth fund, Y-Shares, year-to-date in Morningstar, it is second percentile, outperforming over 400 basis points the benchmark. If you look at the Lumisail's global growth fund, ninth percentile in this downturn. So they have performed similar to what we have historically done in the past downturn.
Yeah, this is certainly really strong performance. And I think most importantly, you all are continuing to do what you always tell investors that you're going to do. And to that point, could you explain in a little bit more detail how you build the portfolio, maybe in accordance to your risk and reward framework?
Yeah, so I mean, the key is that the way we look at risk is we believe that the first thing you need to understand is the range of outcomes in a business. And again, especially in these times, people realize that downside risk matters. It's not just what the upside potential is, but you need to compare that upside potential versus what the downside risk in each and every business that you're going to allocate capital to. If there are two businesses with the same upside, let's say 100% to make it simple, and one has 20% downside, the other one has 50% downside, of course, the first one is a much better reward to risk than the second one. But not only that, what is your skill in terms of assessing downside risk? Meaning, are you realistic in terms of understanding the possibilities of downside scenarios, or are you getting carried away with the recent history and becoming more optimistic or pessimistic than you should in assessing these scenarios? So we have 30 some businesses in our portfolio. We have 100 plus businesses outside of the portfolio that we always track for investing. Every day we come to work and we look at four scenarios. The base case is what we believe is going to happen. The best case is what we think, if everything goes right, would happen to the company. We look at the worst case, understanding if everything is in a kitchen sink scenario, like maybe the one we are going through now, what would be the value of that business? And then the bear case would be what is most likely to go wrong in a business. And then we compare the risk rewards on every company and we allocate capital accordingly.
Got it. Makes sense. And again, in line with the long-term focus and thesis here. You touched on quickly at the onset downside protection and how this is really one of the hallmarks of your approach. Could you please provide some historical context around upside and downside capture?
Of course. So if you look at like our overall upside capture and downside capture for the entire track record, which is again going back to 2006, in down markets, we are top quartile. We are 20th percentile. Historically, we captured 93.7% of the downside. What's interesting is that if you look at the peer group that has done better than us in these down markets, meaning better than 93.7%, their performance in the down markets is better than 20th percentile. But that group as a whole, in up markets, none of them capture 100% of the market, meaning on average, actually, these competitors that do better than us in down markets capture 86% of the upside and they capture 87% of the downside. So though they are top quartile in down market like us, in up markets, this group of managers have bottom quartile performance. Actually, they are 90th percentile on average versus if you look at our performance in up markets, we are top quartile with 103.6% of the upside. And when you look at the other side of the coin, which is those managers that do better than us in up markets, doing better than 103.6%, and we are 24th percentile, those managers that do better than us in up markets, on average, they capture 109% of the upside, but they also capture 107% of the downside. So that group of managers are 86th percentile, meaning they're bottom quartile in down markets. So if you look at our peer group and compare us, we are in this unique position where we are the only manager with this characteristic of like top quartile down and up market capture. And we believe the reason for that is we don't have these biases at the outset when we start our process with a certain screen, whether it be quantitative or qualitative, that leads us to a portfolio with certain characteristics with very pronounced risk factors. What I mean by that is this group of managers that do really well in up markets, if you look at their risk profiles, they have a lot of momentum and beta, and you can essentially replicate that through ETFs by investing momentum ETF or a beta ETF. when you look at those set of managers that do really well in down markets, they are the mirror image of that up market managers. If you look at our profile from a risk perspective, our risk factors are less than 10% of our risk budget. And the reason for that is the way we diversify our business drivers. And lastly, if you look at the last downturn in 2008, our large cap growth strategy outperformed Russell 1000 growth by 10.4% and ranked fourth percentile. And our strategy also outperformed in 2009, coming out of that downturn, and we were top quartile. And if you combine those 2 years, actually our performance was positive, and only, I think, less than 3% of the U.S. managers had positive results in 08, 09 combined. And we were first percentile among all the large cap growth manager group. And so that hopefully gives you a sense for our upside, downside capture and characteristics.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, performance and alpha on the upside is, I think, what a lot of investors focus on. But the downside protection, in particular in a market environment like we're in right now, is also just as important, if maybe not more important. Maybe as just a final question, you've talked a lot about the long-term focus of your investment philosophy and process. But maybe, you know, with short-termism so prevalent among investors right now, your long-term approach is differentiated, as you've highlighted throughout this call today. How does this long-term approach help you as an investor going forward?
I think the long-term approach is always helpful before an inflection point. And the reason is, let's go back to every one of these inflection points. And what is common in every one of these inflection points, as I said before, all the inefficiencies and excesses are cleared in these downturns, right? So in 08, 09, for example, you know, like this downturn, 90%+ of our outperformance came from security selection, not making top-down calls in terms of sectors. But those bottom-up views inform your top-down view as well, meaning rather than saying, this is what I think is going to happen to the GDP or unemployment, you look at it and say, what is embedded in the shares of a company to justify today's stock price? What is the upside? What is the downside? And why? So in 08, 09, if you look at the embedded expectations for energy stocks, in order for you to invest in an energy stock in 08, 09 and make money, forget about making money, to break even, you had to assume $150 oil for the following 5 to 10 years. And back then, there were more books written about peak oil, commodity supercycle, and people making calls about $200 oil than any time before. Looking back, the only thing that was peak about oil was its price. At that point, we had 1.5% in energy and materials combined compared to our peer group, which was 25%+. That wasn't because we had a top-down view, but because we had the long-term view and asked the question, based on long-term structural analysis, which is this is a cyclical industry, how can you justify investing in this company, or how can you have the reward for the risk you're assuming? If you ask that question, you realize that the downside for oil was, you know, $30 oil. The upside was already there. So your upside, even if you assume $200 oil, the upside was around 25% versus your downside was 70% to 80%. And the same thing coming to this downturn, if you look at some of these consumer discretionary companies that are getting, you know, really beaten down, the expectations was that the last 10 years of expansion will continue over the next 10 years. And you look at the history, you don't find a time frame where you had a 20 years expansion. I mean, actually, this was one of the longest expansion we had. So if it wasn't for this virus, it was going to something else. And the point is, it's impossible to call these things. But if you have a long-term view and ask the right questions, it tells you where the risk is. It also tells you where the reward is, so that you're ready when the inflection points happen. By the way, in 2008, there were only 10 stocks that were up. We owned 3 of them. These are very company-specific risk-reward allocations. But again, you have to ask the right questions from a long-term perspective. If you get caught about the next 2 quarters next year, you will never get this, you know, right.
I think that's a great point to make. It's tough to ignore what's happening on the screen day to day, but the long-term focus, if you stay true to that, like you have certainly, you and your team certainly have, I think in the end, it works out certainly. Well, Aziz, I want to say thank you for your time, certainly for your partnership. Your availability is very much appreciated during these volatile times. I'll turn it back to you quickly for any closing comment that you might have.
Again, I want to thank everyone for their time as well. I wish everyone and their families and their loved ones health. That's the most important thing, I think, and we realize this in these times. But also remember that, again, like a professional athlete, you have to train and be disciplined every day to succeed in the long term. And that's what we are doing. Our group is, we are ready for this 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and 3 quarters ago, and 3 days ago. You don't get ready for this the morning off. It's too late to react to, you know, let me wake up and, you know, make analysis in these 10 companies. We already have all these companies that we evaluated, and we are patiently allocating capital, and we are letting those values come to us, and we act only when based on risk reward rather than gut feel or, you know, how you feel that morning and is going to be up or down. Those are very random way of doing things. We believe that the only way to succeed is having a structural, disciplined process and implementing it with basically no emotion in it. Again, I want to wish everyone health, and hopefully we'll be back to normal, but who knows how long this will last in terms of what we are going through. Thank you.
Important information. Average annualized total returns for Luma Sales Growth Fund Class Y shares as of March 31, 2020, 3 months, -11.40%, year to date, -11.40%, 1 year, 0.66%, 3 years, 11.66%, 5 years, 11.28%, 10 years, 13.31%. Average annualized total returns for Russell 1000 growth indexes of March 31, 2020, 3 months, -14.10%, year to date, -14.10%, 1 year, 0.91%, 3 years, 11.32%, 5 years, 10.36%, 10 years, 12.97%. Average annualized total returns for Luma Sales Global Growth Fund Class Y shares as of March 31, 2020, 3 months, -14.45%, year to date, -14.45%, 1 year, -5.20%, 3 years, 8.14%, life of class March 31, 2016, 9.91%. Average annualized total returns for MSCI ACWI net as of March 31, 2020, 3 months, -21.37%, year to date, -21.37%, 1 year, -11.26%, 3 years, 1.50%, life of class March 31, 2016, 4.73%. Performance data quoted represents past performance and is no guarantee of future results. Total return and value will vary, and you may have a gain or loss when shares are sold. Current performance may be lower or higher than quoted. For most recent month-end performance, visit im.natixis.com. Performance for other share classes will be greater or less than shown based on differences in fees and sales charges. You may not invest directly in an index. Performance for periods less than 1 year is cumulative, not annualized. Returns reflect changes in share price and reinvestment of dividends and capital gains, if any. Not all share classes available for purchase by all investors. Class Y shares are available to institutional investors with a minimum initial investment of $100,000 and through certain wrap fee programs, retirement plans, and investment advisory accounts with no minimum. See prospectus for more details. Top 10 holdings for Luma Sales Growth Fund as of March 31, 2020 in percentages. 1. Amazon.com, Inc., 7.18. 2. Visa, Incorporated Class A, 6.583. Alibaba Group Holding Limited, Sponsored ADR, 6.02. 4. Facebook, Inc., Class A, 5.38. 5. Microsoft Corporation, 4.53. 6. Oracle Corporation, 4.36. 7. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc., 4.32. 8. Autodesk, Inc., 4.14. 9. NVIDIA Corporation, 3.70. 10. Roche Holding AG Sponsored ADR, 3.56. Top 10 holdings for Luma Sales Global Growth Fund as of March 31, 2020 in percentages. 1. Amazon.com, Inc., 7.06. 2. Alibaba Group Holding Limited, Sponsored ADR, 6.21. 3. Roche Holding AG, 5.34. 4. Mercado Libre, Inc., 4.86. 5. Visa, Inc., Class A, 4.836, Facebook, Inc., Class A, 4.66, 7, Oracle Corporation, 4.34, 8, Alphabet, Inc., Class A, 4.33, 9, Yum China Holdings, Inc., 3.99, 10, Microsoft Corporation, 3.79, The Russell 1000 Growth Index is an unmanaged index that measures the performance of the large-cap growth segment of the U.S. equity universe. It includes those Russell 1000 companies with higher price-to-book ratios and higher forecasted growth values. The MSCI ACWI, Net, U.S. Index. The MSCI All-Country World Index is a free-float adjusted market capitalization-weighted index that is designed to measure the equity market performance of developed and emerging markets. Alpha is a measure of the difference between a portfolio's actual returns and its expected performance. Given its level of systematic market risk, a positive alpha indicates outperformance and negative alpha indicates underperformance relative to the portfolio's level of systematic risk. Beta is calculated for the three-year period and represents the risk associated with the fund relative to market risks. For example, the market has a beta of 1.00, so if a fund has a beta of 0.85, it can be expected to be 15% less volatile than the overall market. Conversely, if a fund has a beta of 1.08, it can be expected to be 8% more volatile than the overall market. The CBOE Volatility Index, VIX, is a key measure of market expectations of near-term volatility conveyed by S&P 500 stock index option prices. The CBOE Volatility Index, VIX, reflects a market estimate of future volatility, based on the weighted average of the implied volatilities for a wide range of strikes. First and second month expirations are used until 8 days from expiration, then the second and third are used. Risks. Equity securities are volatile and can decline significantly in response to broad market and economic conditions. Foreign and emerging market securities may be subject to greater political, economic, environmental, credit, currency and information risks. Foreign securities may be subject to higher volatility than U.S. securities, due to varying degrees of regulation and limited liquidity. These risks are magnified in emerging markets. Investments in small and mid-size companies can be more volatile than those of larger companies. Growth stocks may be more sensitive to market conditions than other equities, as their prices strongly reflect future expectations. Currency exchange rates between the US dollar and foreign currencies may cause the value of the fund's investments to decline. The index information contained herein is derived from third parties and is provided on an as-is basis. The user of this information assumes the entire risk of use of this information. Each of the third-party entities involved in compiling, computing or creating index information disclaims all warranties, including, without limitation, any warranties of originality, accuracy, completeness, timeliness, non-infringement, mercantility and fitness for a particular purpose. With respect to such information, this material is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice. There can be no assurance that developments will transpire as forecasted. Actual results may vary. The views and opinions expressed are as of March 20, 2020 and may change based on market and other conditions. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit im.natixis.com or call 800-862-4863 for a prospectus or a summary prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully. Natixis Distribution LP is a limited-purpose broker-dealer and the distributor of various registered investment companies for which advisory services are provided by affiliates of Natixis Investment Managers. Expires July 31, 2020. M. A. R. L. 25,327.